Right, I'm a little bit early. I'm a little bit early because I can't take in the news. There's been a problem. Little bit of a technical problem. No news then at the top of the hour, but I'm live. It's 5 o'clock here in Salford in Greater Manchester. My name is Richie Allen. How you doing? Hope you've had a good Wednesday. This is your Richie Allen radio show, live on multiple platforms. And of course, also contactable through Twitter. Do contact me, chat away with me on Twitter, it's at Richie Allen Show there. I've got a couple of brilliant guests for you lined up for an extended conversation. You don't want to miss it, I don't think. Let's get on with the old show then. Let's get on with the old show. Good to be with you as always. Ah, the best laid plans.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk. Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and TriggerWarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome to the program. Well, we've got a terrific show lined up for you today. And before I tell you about that, I've already given you the contact details, haven't I? I have. Yeah, I should have taken in the news there, shouldn't I? But I couldn't do it for some reason. That's all right. It's all lies anyway, isn't it? The Trad Cat Knight himself, Eric Gajewski, returns to the programme today. You know all about Eric. He's got a film out about Marie-Julie Jehenny. Of course, the very, very famous, of course, Catholic and one of the most important Catholic mystics in modern times, of course. She held the stigmata the longest. And the film made by Eric deals with her end-time prophecies and revelations. Eric's a top man. He's a great broadcaster with a huge audience. And we'll be joined today by a friend of Eric's, Father Paul Kramer, will be on the line too from County Cork in God's country. He's a lecturer and author of numerous articles and books on the Catholic faith and on the subject of Fatima. You don't want to miss Eric Gajewski and Paul Kramer. They'll join the programme in about 25 minutes' time after we've rounded up the biggest news stories of the day. Yeah, all right. Really caught me on the hop there. As well in all, as you know, experienced as I am, it caught me on the hop there at about 40 seconds to the 1 minute countdown for the news, and I saw the news wasn't loading. I thought, it's not, what are you going to do? So anyway, I rushed around. There you go. Right, happy birthday Jean-Anne Crowley, my great friend. Mentioned this on the live stream this morning. Had a chat about Jean-Anne, very important friend of mine. Wonderful woman, turned 70 today. And she's been having a fine old time of it, I do believe, there in Cleggan. Truly extraordinary person. And all the best wishes to her from me and, well, from the team at the Richie Allen Radio Show. There is no team. That's a standing. That's what would you call that? That's an inside joke. My team, well, it's Jean-Anne, really, offering me advice and help and recommendations from time to time. Now, the House of Representatives will vote to impeach President Trump later today. Well, that's Eastern time, later today. It'll be about midnight here. What's it all about, eh? What's it all about? Well, Trump, in case you've been living on another planet, is accused of pressuring Ukraine to dig up some dirt on Joe Biden and Joe Biden's son, Hunter. Trump is accused of asking Ukraine for a bit of help in getting some dirt, some damaging info on one of his Democratic challengers. You see, Hunter Biden worked for a Ukrainian company back when old Joe was the US vice president. Do you know this? I know many of you will know all this, but I've got to tell you, just in case some don't, you know. Trump's accused of dangling a couple of things by way of bargaining with Ukraine. Number one, the withholding of $400 million of military aid to Ukraine, which had already been allocated by Congress, and a White House meeting for Ukraine's president. So the Democrats say that's an abuse of presidential power. using the office for personal political gain and to the detriment of national security. Yeah. Why national security? Well, the Democrats say that Ukraine was using that money in its ongoing conflict with Russia. He's also accused Trump is of obstructing Congress by refusing to cooperate with the inquiry. Here's Sky News Washington editor Cordelia Lynch.
That's right. We're expecting around 6 hours of debate between the Republicans and the Democrats. Then it will be that critical vote for those two articles of impeachment, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. We're expecting that somewhere between 6:30 and 7:30 in the evening here, but there can certainly be delays. And on the House floor, Republicans have already been pushing for an adjournment. They were denied that, but we are seeing the partisanship, the division, the bad blood play out again today, as we have seen it play out throughout this investigation. Democrats, though, insist that this is a somber day. It is not one that they want to take place, but they feel they are duty-bound to proceed with. Take a listen to the Democrat Jim McGovern make the case for why he believes Donald Trump is indeed impeachable.
The president withheld congressionally approved military aid to Ukraine, a country under siege, not to fight corruption, but to extract a personal political favor. The evidence is as clear as it is overwhelming. If a president undermining our national security and using the federal government for his own selfish personal gain is not impeachable conduct, then, Madam Speaker, I don't know what is.
I don't know what is. Said that guy, whoever that guy is. So what about the Republicans then? What about the Republicans?
They believe this is a sham process, that it is deeply political in nature, and that the president did nothing wrong, or at least what he did does not constitute an impeachable offence. Take a listen now to the Republican Debbie Lesko, just to get a sense of how angry some of them are.
This is the most unfair, politically biased, rigged process that I have seen in my entire life. Here are the facts. There is no proof, none, that the president has committed an impeachable offense. Not one of the Democrat witnesses, not one, was able to establish that the president committed bribery, treason, or high crimes and misdemeanors as required in the U.S. Constitution.
So there. This is all going to culminate later on in a vote which is expected to pass. And then it's off to the Senate for a trial in January. There you are. Why doesn't Tony Blair just go away? Hey, he should be hanging upside down by his ankles in Tower Bridge, shouldn't he? In London Bridge, in the Tower of London, shouldn't he? The mass murdering animal Tony Blair. He spoke in London this morning and said that Labour pursued a path of almost comic indecision over Brexit during the election, alienated both sides of the debate, and this contributed to their landslide defeat. Tony Blair. Here's a little bit of him. I know. Here's Blair this morning.
We pursued a path of almost comic indecision, alienated both sides of the debate, leaving our voters without guidance or leadership. The absence of leadership on what was obviously the biggest question facing the country then reinforced all the other doubts about Jeremy Corbyn. What is important is to understand why his leadership was so decisively rejected. This is not about Jeremy Corbyn as a person. I've no doubt he's someone of deeply held and sincere beliefs who stayed true to them under harsh attack. But politically, people saw him as fundamentally opposing what Britain and Western countries stand for. The takeover of the Labour Party by the far left turned it into a glorified protest movement with cult trimmings, utterly incapable of being a credible government. The result has brought shame on us.
What was that?
The result has brought shame on us.
Say that again.
The result has brought shame on us.
Holy Jesus, eh? Over a million people murdered in Iraq, that man, a million people. Two more million. 2 million more displaced. A million dead. Women and children blown to pieces. And he says that Jeremy Corbyn has brought shame on the Labour Party.
What kind of fuckery are you?
Yeah. We'll just leave that one right there. This hasn't made the broadcast media today, which I find interesting. Well, it has. Well, hang on. The BBC and Sky haven't gone anywhere near this today. It has been discussed on talk radio here in England, but not on BBC or Sky. I don't know about ITV today. But the press in the Midlands has covered this. Leaders at an Islamic private school where extremist books were found have been swift to address concerns raised by this discovery. Now, Ofsted rated Jamia Islamia Birmingham Boys School. That would be Jamia Islamia Birmingham Boys School. Ofsted rated it inadequate back in July. Why? Because books were found in the library, some of them promoting support for an Islamic State. Not for Islamic State, the terrorists, the Western created terrorists, no. And this has been misunderstood on social media today. A lot of goons who can't read, who can't actually read something and ingest it. A lot of goons think the books in the Birmingham Boys School were promoting Islamic State. No, they weren't. Some books in the library were promoting support for an Islamic State. Not good either, you might argue. So a follow-up inspection found the books had been taken away, but that the school didn't meet all required standards. One book found in the library of Jamia Islamia Birmingham Boys School contained the words, "Don't make the Jews and the Christians your friends." Right. Here's the editor of Spiked Online, Brendan O'Neill, speaking on talk radio today.
It's terrifying. I think it's really genuinely terrifying.
It's not fucking terrifying at all. It's concerning.
In the book, one of the books also said, don't be friends with Jews or Christians. And as you say, some of the books were pro-Islamic State and seemed to contain an incredibly intolerant message. And I think it's...
Yeah, don't let the truth get in the way of a good lie. The books did not contain support for Islamic State.
And seemed to contain an incredibly intolerant message. And I think it's deeply worrying that a school would have those books in its library and children could access them. I think there's a broader problem.
The chances of children reading anything that comes out of a library in 2019 are pretty remote, but still.
Problem here. What, the problem is illustrated by the fact that not that many people are talking about this news story and this situation. And if you just think, imagine if a Christian school had pro-Nazi literature
yes.
in the library, for example, or books saying you shouldn't be friends with Muslims. Muslims are not very nice people. I mean, that would cause a big, big scandal. I think one of the problems in relation to Islamic schools, and there have been numerous problems in some Islamic schools in the country, one of the problems is that it's so difficult now to discuss any problem that comes from the Muslim community because people are instantly shot down as Islamophobic, instantly shot down as racist. And I think that everyone loses out as a consequence of that because it becomes so hard to have an honest discussion about problems in our society.
Indeed.
Yeah. He holds those opinions until it comes to criticism of Zionism. Brendan O'Neill is typical of the alternative right. He's a monumental hypocrite and a coward. He's right, of course. Discussion of, you know, terrorism and discussion about young Pakistani Muslim lads going down a bad road is hushed up for fears that people will be called racist. Of course, but when the shoe's on the other foot, when people are called racist for talking about the Zionist influence in UK politics, guys like Brendan O'Neill, they're nowhere to be seen. He's like a bit of a meerkat, really. You see, when it comes to Islam and criticism of it, Brendan's head is right up out of the ground and he's standing up with his neck jutting forward. When it comes to standing up for people who are being marginalised because they criticise the undue and nefarious influence the State of Israel and its agents wield in countries like this, this guy will be nowhere to be seen to stand up for your rights and to say, well, don't call him racist, let's hear him out. Brendan O'Neill. 15 minutes, quarter past five it is. It is Wednesday's programme. We are the 18th of December, meaning that this day next week will, of course, be Christmas Day. Nurses briefly. About 15,500 nurses in Northern Ireland are taking strike action. This is a dispute over pay and patient safety. It's a bit of a first. The Royal College of Nursing represents about 9,000 nurses. They walked out at 8 o'clock this morning. That's the first time it's done that in its 103-year history. Yes. And another 6,500 nurses, members of Unison, they walked out too. Nurses in Northern Ireland feel undervalued compared to nurses doing the same jobs in the UK, in Britain, in England and Scotland. They want parity. And they're right, of course, they want parity. And when you factor in that Northern Ireland has the worst record in terms of meeting waiting time targets for cancer, dreadful accident and emergency waiting times, and routine operation waiting times are horrendous in the north of Ireland. England has seen its performance sink to a record low of just over 81% in Northern Ireland. It's currently below 66%. That's the amount of patients seen in 4 hours in A&E. What are the chances of you being seen in 4 hours or under in casualty, when in England 81% chance, in Northern Ireland 66% chance? The suspension of the devolved government hasn't helped, of course. Fascinating interview today. Adam Bolton of Sky interviewed the Health Secretary Matt Hancock. Very interesting indeed. Bolton wanted to talk about the government's pledge to recruit 50,000 new nurses. And Adam Bolton quite rightly said to Matt Hancock, you created this mess, and it's no wonder nurses are leaving, and it's no wonder there are so many vacancies. You will hear Adam Bolton first.
It's a problem you created. This is
no,
the point.
So this is not,
you know, the reason why.
It is a problem you created.
You're having to say we're going to get 50,000 new nurses. It's because you've made it a less attractive profession. So what it comes down to is the NHS safe in Tory hands. Do you guys know what you're doing? People might think you don't know what you're doing.
Well, ma on buckle, Adam. Ma on buckle. That means good boy. Very good. You created this mess. Nobody wants to be a nurse. It's shocking. So there you are. Nobody believes you.
Well, people clearly voted for us. And I am absolutely determined to meet the commitments that we made in that manifesto. Right. 50,000 more nurses.
Yeah, hang on.
But let me just explain this point. The number of nurses is higher than in 2010. It's gone up in the last year since I've been Health Secretary by 5,000. That's great. So it is moving in the right direction. It's just not going fast enough.
But also this 50,000 figure, with all due respect, is insulting the public, isn't it?
Because no, on the contrary.
From where we are now,
on the contrary.
There, even if you succeed, there will only be 30,000 more.
No, there will be 50,000 more.
No, there won't, because people are leaving the profession and you're trying to retain them.
No, I will repeat this until I'm blue in the face. And I think the public understands it. And I just wish that more presenters did, right?
If you said that to me, right, Bolton gives him a pass here. If he said that to me as a presenter, I would humiliate him live on air. The public get it. It's a shame presenters can't get it. He's lying through his teeth.
Understands it, and I just wish that more presenters did, right?
I would hammer him.
Right? Our commitment is incredibly clear. It is to increase the number of nurses in the NHS by 50,000 from the number today.
This is horseshit. He's saying that one of the ways we'll do this is by preventing existing nurses from leaving. So it is nonsense. It is doublespeak. It is devil speak. It is shit speak. It is garbage to say we'll increase the amount of nurses by 50,000. One of the ways we'll do that is we'll stop about 19,000 leaving. This is garbage.
Hey, to the number at the end of the parliament in 5 years' time. The number today is 280,599, and we'll increase that number by 50,000.
To what?
Now, to 330,599 or more. Mm. Now, the way that you do that is twofold. Firstly, you put more in. So, for instance, getting more trainees and more new nurses. And we've estimated about 31,000 of the 50,000 increase will come from that. And also, we're taking action to stop more nurses leaving, to stop nurses from leaving. At the moment, about 27,000 nurses mm-hmm. leave every year. I want to reduce that figure. So even if we didn't have any new nurses coming in, any more new nurses, yeah. If we took the retention measures, we would end up with more nurses in the NHS because fewer yeah, would leave.
I mean, it's I understand really that, but it's still about keeping...
Maybe Goodwill Hunting understands it. Maybe you've got to be a mathematical genius on the level of Will Hunting to understand what Hancock... Maybe Hancock is telling the truth, maybe. Just sounds like horseshit to me.
Keeping people at work all there now...
Yes.
Most people's measure is not an increase.
No, it's not. Good man.
I mean, it's just straightforward.
No, you're wrong, and the public gets it.
Punch him, man.
And we're really clear about the commitment. The commitment is that if you look at the total... Hold on, Adam. Don't let me explain it, and then maybe you'll understand.
At this stage now, I think I would have twatted him.
Even the newspapers that have been bending over backwards to support you during the election campaign, like The Telegraph, do not accept your version of these figures.
It's funny that the newspapers that supported him during the election campaign and enabled the lies, now those newspapers, safe in the knowledge that we've got at least 5 more years of the Tories, now the right-wing newspapers are saying, yeah, it is bullshit, really. Yeah, it is. It is, isn't it funny? We kept quiet, though, during the campaign. Yeah, I know. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, back in a minute with a little bit more. And then we're off to the US and we're off to Ireland. Father Paul Kramer and Eric Kaczewski will join the programme. You don't want to miss it.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, happy birthday to Jean Ann Crowley. Back with my guests after this. Happy birthday, Jean Ann. Yeah, music from Altered Images there. Happy birthday on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 26 minutes it is past the hour. Welcome to the programme if you're just joining us. Great to be with you as always. Lots and lots of interest in this show today. Lots of interest on social media. And I had a lot of emails about my guests today as well. Just before we welcome Eric back to the programme, and welcome Father Paul Kramer for the first time. Let me read you this, because we're going to get through a lot today on the programme in the 90 minutes that we have. This, of course, making the news yesterday on the 83rd birthday of Pope Francis. This is from The Independent. Pope Francis has abolished the pontifical secret used in clergy sexual abuse cases after mounting criticism that the high degree of confidentiality has been used to protect pedophiles, silence victims, and keep law enforcement from investigating crimes. In a new document, Francis declared that information in abuse cases must be protected by church leaders to ensure its security, integrity, and confidentiality. But, he said, pontifical secret no longer applies to abuse-related accusations, trials, and decisions under the Catholic Church's canon law. He also raised from 14 to 18 the cut-off age below which the Vatican considers pornographic images to be child pornography. The laws were issued yesterday on the 83rd birthday of the Pope. The Pontiff, as he struggles to respond to the global explosion of the abuse scandal, his own missteps and demands for greater transparency and accountability from victims, law enforcement and ordinary Catholics alike. Now, we're going to get through a lot today with my guests. We'll talk about Fatima. We'll talk about apostasy in the church, in the Catholic Church. Idolatry we'll talk about. We will talk about one world religion, the Antichrist, taking scripture literally. I hope we'll get into some of that as well, because I'm excited to welcome to the programme for the first time Father Paul Kramer. Paul is a lecturer and has written articles and books on the Catholic faith even, and on the subject of Fatima. But he's an Irish-American. Bristol, Connecticut, USA is where he was born. Studied philosophy and theology in Rome at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas back in the 70s. He was ordained to the priesthood in 1980. And he's got a huge following, Paul, because I've been contacted today by lots of people excited to hear him on the programme. Eric Kaczewski, you know all about. Eric's got a movie out at the moment about Marie-Julie Jeheny, 3 Days of Darkness, it's called. One of the most important Catholic mystics in modern times. Fascinating. Do check that out. Tradcat Night is massive. Traditional Catholicism. Nobody does it like Eric. Huge following as well. Check out his website if you haven't done before. And his broadcasts are always interesting, informative and thought-provoking. Welcome back to the programme, Eric Kaczewski. And Father Paul Kramer, you're very welcome to this parish, sir. How are you?
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for bringing me on.
It's good to have you, Paul. I believe you're in Cork this evening. Is that right, in County Cork?
Yeah, North Cork.
So you're in North Cork. Well, it's good to be with you. I'm from Waterford myself. Paul, give us a reaction first to what we heard yesterday from Pope Francis. It's an interesting story. Everybody covered it. That pontifical secret will be abolished in clergy sexual abuse cases because he says transparency is important and we need to ensure security, integrity and confidentiality. Sounds like a good thing, Paul. What say you?
In a perfect world, the church would discipline the priests and they would be tried by ecclesiastical courts, and they would be punished, and they could be given very severe punishment. But that is not happening in today's world. So it's not a perfect solution to the problems of the church today. But the difficulty there also is difficult on both sides, because something has to be done to protect the innocent children and youth from sexual predators who infiltrate into the priesthood, because they know what the by following that as a career for the for them it's a mere career choice when a pedophile becomes a priest, because that is the kind of profession that provides them with access to children. Pedophiles like to be teachers, they like to be priests, because that gives them access to children. So something, of course, has to be done, and law enforcement is going to do something about it. That's fine on one hand. But on the other hand, like in the case we see with Cardinal Pell, they're using this very selectively to go after priests that they don't like, and they're fabricating false charge against priests. I know there's a journalist in Australia who recently demonstrated that the logistics of the alleged crime were absolutely impossible, that the boy who claimed to have been abused could not possibly have gotten from point A to point B and done all the things he had said he had done to get there. It could not have happened. It was a physical impossibility.
Before Eric comes in, I'm keen to hear what Eric thinks about this. Am I to understand it, Paul? Father Paul Kramer is on the line with Eric Kaczewski. Am I to understand it? I mean, I grew up, obviously, in Waterford, and as a journalist at WLRFM, I would have covered abuse in the Catholic Church in Ireland extensively. And I know you take that very seriously, but I think in the work that you've done, and I know you've published books, you've edited books, I might understand that you think that one of the reasons we saw so much abuse in the Catholic Church you contend, or you think that it was an attack on the church itself, that these things did happen, they are happening, but that there was something going on that maybe a lot of people never contemplated, that the church itself was being brought low, that this was part of some agenda.
In one respect, that was the case, because these sort of people who are given over to the unnatural vices, and such as pedophilia, they infiltrate and get into high positions. And once they're in high positions, they do everything they can to bring their own kind into positions of high high positions. So much so that even back in the 12th century, St. Peter Damian wrote about that situation. It was the same thing happening then, how these perverts would gain position in the church, and they would bring their own kind and promote their own kind.
Mm-hmm. Eric, they've infiltrated not just religious institutions. They infiltrate everywhere. I don't want to stay with this, obviously, for too long, because there's so much to cover. It isn't just religion. It's politics, of course. We've got a huge problem here in this country with institutional child abuse, but coming from the establishment, the financial elites and the political elites, Eric.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Everything that Father Kramer has had to say is absolutely true. I mean, for me, it's a part of a bigger picture is of this satanic infiltration of the church, Masonic infiltration, Marxist infiltration, which was talked about by Bella Dodd in one of her books, School of Darkness, many, many decades ago. And it's exactly what Father Kramer has to say. I mean, they're trying to infiltrate, ultimately to cast shame upon the church as a part of the persecution. I would say that's one aspect of it. Father Kramer and I both agree that there's going to be a wet martyrdom to come here, a communist persecution across the board, wherein, I mean, they're literally going to come for priests. They'll come for people like you and I. They'll even come for people like you, Richie, who I know is will not be taking the mark of the beast down the road. But it's all to normalize this stuff. I would say also it ties in with Catholic prophecy from my point of view, because there's long-awaited prophecies indicating that there would be a pope to flee Rome. So many years ago, I talked about how when a lot of these scandals started breaking, and it didn't just happen, you know, in the past year or so, there's an Occupy the Vatican movement, which not a lot of people are privy to, but right there in and around the Vatican, all kinds of protesters. We obviously see it on the secular side here in the West with, you know, was it Occupy New York, Occupy this, Occupy that. I've just alluded to that they're trying to make it appear as though Catholics are completely evil, to hate religion altogether in order to institute the Antichrist new religion, in which basically it will be an embrace from anyone, from any quote-unquote religion, as long as you know eventually take his mark. But in any case, I say pay attention to, as the hatred grows specifically there in Rome, for this Occupy the Vatican movement to pick up, because I think this is what might cause the true pope, and we've talked about this in times past, Richie, Father Kramer and I believe that Pope Benedict is the true pope, not Francis. He's a fraud. He's an imposter. He holds no jurisdiction. And I know we're going to be getting into this, because this is the essence of Father Kramer's recent book.
I'm going to put links out to where people can find the recent book. It only came out a few weeks ago, Father Paul Kramer's book. We are going to talk about this. And this is because Benedict didn't pass away, as has been tradition in the Catholic Church. But I want to ask you this, both of you. I don't mind which of you picks up this question. I would have had a big problem with Benedict the 16th, Ratzinger, as he was known, because I'm convinced, and you might have an argument, you might disagree with this, I'm convinced that he was complicit in the cover-up of child abuse in Ireland. I do believe that he was, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, I do believe that he was a bit of a watchdog for abuse, and he did communicate with Irish cardinals and Irish bishops to tell them to keep quiet, as it were, when things were happening in parishes. And the best thing to do was to move the priest from parish A to parish B. And that's been my understanding. And when I was on the radio in Ireland, I heard testimony from people to that end. What do you think of that?
Go ahead, Father.
Well, if If that was Benedict's response, of course, then he would he's got to be held responsible in some manner, because there's no excuse for just moving priests around from place to place. There has to be discipline. I believe it was I'm trying to think of the name of the Saint Anthony Mary Claret, who said that these kind of priests should be sent to some place like Devil's Island. Right. They should be sent to a desert island and serve hard time at hard labor. And that's the kind of thing that should be done with pedophiles. They should be locked up in solitary confinement, put to hard labor. They should be isolated in some remote place, and they should be very harshly punished.
I want to point something out, Paul. I want to point something out, Paul, by the way. I'm delighted that Father Paul Kramer is on the line. Eric Kaczewski is on the line. I want to point something out, because things sometimes do get lost in translation. Eric and Paul have condemned and will condemn paedophilia. They have never said that paedophilia hasn't been an issue in the Catholic Church. They acknowledge that it has been and is. They're very much interested in the history of Catholicism and traditional Catholicism, and they believe that this stuff happened and was allowed to happen possibly as one part of an agenda to bring down traditional Catholicism. Now, I want to ask you both this, and you can take all the time you want to answer this. As a bit of a lapsed Catholic myself, was there a time, Paul and Eric, in history when Catholicism was a force for good, was doing genuine good? I mean, in people's lives, in their homes, in their communities. And could you identify that time when it began to come under attack and how that happened? Because my listeners are absolutely fascinated by this. A lot of spiritual people listen to this program, even if I am, as I said, a bit of a lapsed spiritualist or a lapsed Catholic, but they're fascinated. Was there traditional Catholicism? Where did it exist? How did it work? What did it achieve? And when did we begin to see it being brought down? Guys, over to you.
Go ahead, Father.
It has. There have been. It has been somewhat cyclical in the history of the Church. There are times when the Church has been at her spiritual strength, and the Church has been a great force for good at those times, doing every good work for body and soul for the faithful, and for all those who needed the Church's help, whether material or spiritual. Then there are times when there has been corruption in the Church, and with the corruption, all the evils crept in, and but they've always been kept somewhat in check in past centuries, up until the Second Vatican Council, when evil began to be promoted under a false idea of liberty. But this idea of liberty was really they're promoting license to for one to give free expression to every every evil inclination and passion, so that it was going to lead to this sort of a thing. When you have priests who are preaching, do whatever you like, do what you feel is right, and this is what Bergoglio says: as long as you do what you think is right, you're going to be saved. Well, no. If you're a pedophile and you think that's all right, you're going to be sent to the lowest pit of hell, and you deserve to be sent off to Devil's Island to do hard labor. But the problem is that there has been an organized attempt for these groups to enter into the Church to gain positions of power. They want to take over the Church, and they want to transform it into a new institution created according to their own image and likeness of their own ugly souls.
Changing centuries and centuries and centuries of teaching, Eric, you kind of got me into this a few months ago. And you've identified, Eric, I think, a kind of a loose kind of a time period when this began to explode, when, you know, Catholic priests were, as Father Paul said there, moving away from scripture and doctrine and taking that kind of liberal, do what you like type of attitude that Paul just described there, Eric.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The spirit of a man has long been within the walls of the church, if you will, long before the Second Vatican Council. There's been numerous popes long before even Pius X that talked about how the enemies were inside the church, including Leo XIII. But Pope St. Pius X is the most common pope, which really pointed towards this one world religion, which will have people from all walks of life, if you will, that will embrace this new religion. And it's very unfortunate, Richie, just to follow up what Father Crane was saying, you know, obviously the plan is to really get people to move away from Catholicism, move into this new church, this apostate church of darkness, as Blessed Anna Emmerich called it. And just yesterday I had someone on the podcast mentioned to me, and I wasn't aware of this because I've invited him on my podcast in times past, Sean Hannity, that popular broadcaster or conservative type. He just left Catholicism, someone told me, as a result of this corruption. Now, I've seen it with numerous of my friends. I'm sure Father Paul Kramer has seen it in his work and his apostles. It's very unfortunate to see people leaving what we believe to be the true faith, as you know, Richie, on the account of corruption.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It's all part of a bigger plan. They've got the mainstream media. They want to make us look like, you know, complete idiots. And by the way, to follow up on what Father Kramer had to say for the Catholics listening in today, Pope St. Pius V, way back in the good old days, he actually alluded to how the sodomite clergy should be handed over to the secular authorities to be put to death. One step further, the devil's island.
What about those who say, Eric, Paul, you might come back in on this. Just again, for listeners joining the program now, right till the end of the show, just before 7, we've got Father Paul Kramer. Paul's an author. He's ordained back in 1980, traditional Catholic priest, studied in Rome. Talked about that earlier on. You know all about Eric and Tradcat Night. This is an absolutely incredibly fascinating conversation, and it's lit a fire in the imaginations of our listeners. It really has. Paul, what about those who might say, right, okay, guys, but not to say devil's advocates, maybe not the best term to use today of all days, but just to be kind of curmudgeonly, what about those who might say, look, it's all very well saying the church started to adopt a more liberal approach to Christian teaching, but what about those who might say, well, it kind of had to? The world was changing. You know, people were becoming more liberal. They were becoming more expressive in the way they expressed themselves sexually. You know, we had gay men and women becoming more accepted in society. I don't want to dwell on homosexuality or anything like that, but I'm just making the point. And that the church just couldn't ignore stuff like that. Like, the church just couldn't keep telling people, priests couldn't keep standing up on the pulpit every Sunday morning telling people this is all wrong, this is the work of the devil. The church kind of had to roll with the punches and adapt, Paul. What do you think of people who say that? Because I get that a lot from people.
Well, the first thing that has to be pointed out is that not just the Catholic Church, but we're talking about religion as going into back to the Old Testament, going back to the very beginning. We read in Scripture in the book of Genesis, what is the first thing that God did was he issued his decree of law, what is forbidden and what is permitted. The essence of religion is obedience to the law of God. This is our relationship with our Creator, because he is the one who made us. He created the whole world. He created our individual souls. And so he has the rightful dominion over us. And this is simply a question of the natural law. The morality of the church is an expression of the natural law that we could know by the application of right reason, the proper understanding of ethics. We would arrive at the same moral code. So, but it is enforced by God in this supernatural economy of grace, whereas we are commanded by God to observe his moral law. with the understanding that if we are good and faithful servants, he is going to reward us with eternal happiness. And if we live in rebellion against God's law, against his rulership, we will separate ourselves from him for all eternity.
Now, Paul, do you know what? I knew you would say that, and it's a good answer. I knew you would say that, but it doesn't quite kind of answer my question. Because my question is, I don't speak for society, but society accepts some of the things that traditional Catholic teaching say are wrong and are immoral and are against God's teaching. Society says, well, no, sorry, but we don't agree with that. You know, we see same-sex marriage now, we see lots of different things. Again, I don't want to go through it, I don't want to dwell on it. We see lots of things, and society says no. Law, secular law says no, these things are okay. And I knew you'd give that answer, but the point is, if the church, and I know you're going to bat me, you're going to knock me right down here, now you're going to try to anyway, but if the church had kept the attitude of, well, no, it's wrong for same-sex couples, it's wrong for same-sex couples to marry and all the rest of it, well, the church would just disappear, wouldn't it? Ultimately. Because society says, the vast majority of people in the world today, they say, well, no, we don't have any problem with that. And I don't mean you personally, Paul, but the church is outdated, it's old-fashioned, it's been left behind, you're in the wrong century. What do you say to that?
Well, we have to bear in mind that this is the result of corruption, that there is a right moral order, and that is that cannot bend to relativism. And that was the message of Pope Benedict XVI, that we cannot compromise with this moral relativism. What is right remains forever right. What is wrong is wrong.
Yeah,
and the consequences, of course, are that in one society that happens to be undergoing a great deal of corruption, the result of the corruption is that they become very permissive in all kinds of immorality and unnatural vices and things. And the result, of course, is not as if God is going to allow this to go on forever.
Right,
He is the Lord over the whole world. He is the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings, and he will not tolerate this much longer.
Can we come back to that in a second, Paul? Because I have a question for Eric. We'll come back in a second to what you think might be coming down the line. I know you want to talk more about Benedict, and I know we want to talk about why you believe that the Antichrist might be here, and what that even might mean for people. Father Paul Kramer, Eric Kaczewski are our guests. Eric, just to pick up the point that Father Paul made there, couldn't it also be argued, Eric, that God's law was basically translated into what the church decided it was? That ultimately we've got that weak point where we're still taking man's interpretation of what God decreed to be right and wrong. What do you say, Eric?
Well, we know as Catholics, and actually this is a part of Father Kramer's book when we're dealing with the papacy, we know via scripture itself that when Jesus handed over the keys to Peter, that the church can define infallibly on the matters of faith and morals and do so on that divine level. Now, it's very interesting in our times, as Father Kramer will point out in our book, is we've got an individual who claims to be a pope, yet is denying some of the basic truths of the Catholic faith. He's being obstinate about it. And Father Kramer's book essentially arrives at the conclusion that the church is infallibly taught that we cannot have a heretic pope. It simply is not possible. So it comes back to the question of authority, which can be proven historically. Getting back to the one point where Father Kramer had mentioned, because I was hoping I could talk to a little bit about this today.
Of course.
Ultimately, we believe as Catholics, either since this world is for Jesus and we're trying to, as Catholics, promote the social kingship of Christ, either we're going to live in a Christian world and a Christian society or not. And obviously there would be consequences to that. And when I bring you on my show and I come on your show, we always talk about these divine warnings of nature, right? We see the bizarre weather that's happening out in Europe. And these are precisely what we find in the consensus of Catholic prophecy, that there would be these warnings before the worst of the worst chastisements would hit. And when we're talking about chastisement, this of course is in God's love, because he wants people to correct themselves. He wants people to say, oh goodness, oops, you know, we made a mistake. It's time for us to return back to that faith that Jesus Christ had laid down. But ultimately, this, of course, as you know, Richie, is an ongoing battle, if you will, between Catholics and Protestants. Protestants will argue, well, the church doesn't have any authority, but obviously, from a Catholic perspective, we believe otherwise, and we should remain faithful to that original faith that was stamped down, passed down through the early Catholic apostles. By Jesus Christ. And that's what we're trying to do as traditional Catholics. So it would go back to your argument. You said, you know, I'm trying to paraphrase here, as the world kind of gets worse, as society gets worse, the church would seemingly like disappear. And that's what Father Kramer and I are trying to point out, that the church more or less is going underground, will go full-fledged underground as this apostate church arrives onto the scene, which flows in accordance with scripture, tradition, all these Marian apparitions. And there will be very few to get through this storm. So I hope that answers your question enough. I know I jumped around a little bit.
No, it does. It's really, really fascinating. I've been asked to put canon law to you both, to Father Paul and yourself. Maybe Paul will come back in. How did canon law take precedence? A listener has said to me, canon law kind of gave a get-out clause to priests who behaved badly in the past. That might be worth explaining to our listeners, Paul. What do you think?
Well, it's not so much canon law. It's so much the problem has been the enforcement of law, because when you have corrupt people coming, rising to the highest levels, they promote their own kind, and they allow them to get away with things. It becomes a criminal organization, a club. When you have a gang of people who are perverts and have no respect for God's law, yet they, in their supreme hypocrisy, they wear the attire of bishops and at least have been ordained bishops unworthily. You're going to have the letter of the law will not be observed. The law will become a dead letter, and that's really what the problem has been. The problem is not canon law. The problem is that canon law is not being enforced.
It's not being enforced. Lots and lots of tweets on this. Faisal tweets that he does think it is possible that Christianity is being attacked, but he thinks it's actually the highest level of the Vatican that's doing it. The Vatican working against Christianity and Catholicism, says Faisal there. Sean wanted to ask, this is Sean Hinchcliffe, what would be a quick definition to explain today's Catholics and traditional Catholics, if he was asked to explain it? I don't know if one of you want to pick that up. And we'll move on to more pressing things then. I know there's lots you want to get through. How would you explain that to somebody listening for the very first time?
If I could jump in just for a minute, Father, and we'll let you follow up. Listen, we've talked about this infiltration in the church. We're saying the Vatican. We have to know, I mean, who is in the Vatican? Are these individuals actually really Catholic? There's a prominent leader in the traditional community who's no longer with us, Archbishop Lefebvre, who founded the Society of St. Pius X, who argued in the late 80s, Rome has lost the faith. They've left the church. So objectively speaking, we've got to point out that in the very least, these individuals who are in the Vatican, a large number of them, are material heretics, meaning what they are purporting out to the public isn't the true Catholic faith. Even the conservative types, even your Cardinal Burkes, the Cardinal Sarahs of the world, unfortunately, right? But then you've got other ones out there who are just outright apostates and manifest heretics, public heretics, as Father Kramer points out in his book on Bergoglio Francis, men who obstinately will look back in history and say, okay, the church was wrong on the death penalty, which is something that Francis has said in times past. This is what we need to do now. That is letting people know he's identifying what the church has said. He's saying it's wrong. This is what I teach you. That is the very essence of being a Protestant. I mean, it's like Luther part two, if you will. So these men are not Catholic. So the Vatican largely right now, is it Catholic? I know I'll let Father Kramer jump in to add some more evidences, but we would say they are modernists. These individuals who have an erroneous, sort of like if you were to go into the grocery store and you're looking for Coca-Cola, which would represent Catholicism, and you come out with, Coke Zero or whatever other versions they have now, it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It's a water. Yeah, it's a pseudo-Catholicism with a K. So when I get that all the time when I do these media appearances, well, it's the Vatican, it's the Catholic Church. No, it's those men who have infiltrated the church who are passing themselves off as Catholics.
And you believe that Pope Francis is one of those, Paul. Would he be consciously doing that? Is this man?
Yes, he would, because what Eric said about the modernists, modernism is the objective set of errors, the mindset. That's the heresy that was condemned by Pope St. Pius X. But these men are not just modernists. Their modernism is an expression of a philosophy that goes back to the Enlightenment and earlier. And these men, that mentality, that ideology of theirs is actually a mystical doctrine of their sect. They belong to an established sect, and they will be exposed. The day will come when they will be exposed and they will be expelled, because the men who have taken over the Vatican are not Catholics. They belong to a secret sect, and that sect is known to the world as the sect of Freemasonry.
I was watching,
which is largely behind the pedophilia and the sodomy, by the way. I mean, there's anyone who's done research on Freemasonry and just Marxism in general knows that they're sexual deviants. I'm not giving a pass on, you know, those priests or clergy who truly have, you know, the whole quote unquote same sex attraction. But
not all of them now, Eric. Hang on, my friend, my good friend. It's good to know you. It's good to have you back on the program. Not all Marxists and Freemasons are sexual deviants. We can't say
not
that.
Not all, but there's a strong connection. Yeah, there's definitely a strong connection. It stems back to sexual rights of the Kabbalists, the Talmudists. I mean, Father Kramer has also digged into the past of Freemasonry and demonstrated these connections between, the Talmudists, Freemasonry. But yeah, I definitely don't want to make it seem like it's a pass, because I would say in these times, Richie, more than ever, we've got an awful lot of demons that we're dealing with. So temptation is on the rise. There was this one famous vision of Leo the 13th going way back in the late 1800s that indicated that God would allow 100 years for the devil to attempt to try to destroy the Catholic Church. And as we get closer to you mentioned my movie earlier, Marie Julie Jahani, 3 Days of Darkness. As we get closer to the 3 Days of Darkness, there are more and more diabolical activity happening. This is why we're seeing so many strange stories, if you will, that are so bizarre that it literally make the hair stand up on the back of your head. But as we get closer to 3 Days of Darkness, it's indicated, Richie, that every devil is going to be let loose.
Every devil
from hell. So talk about temptation. We're all dealing with it. It's clergy. It's you and I. And we all have to do our best to remain in a state of grace from a Christian standpoint and to battle the demonic forces.
I don't want to get bogged down, Eric. I want to bring Paul back in, Father Paul Kramer. I don't want to get bogged down in kind of childish discussions that you guys have had a million times with a million other journalists over the years. But there is something that fascinates me. First of all, I wouldn't dream of patronizing you or Paul. I think you're very fascinating. I think you're very, very smart guys. I was watching videos, lectures that Paul has given. I've been watching you, Paul. You've probably felt a little tingling sensation on the back of your neck there in the last couple of days. That's been me. I've been watching your videos on YouTube. And I think you're a profoundly smart guy with a lot of very interesting things to say. But I don't want to get bogged down in childishness or semantics, but I do want to say this. I'm fascinated by this. I've never bought the idea that we were created. I don't want to get into this. But just because Paul won't know this, I've never bought into the idea that I was created by a supreme father in his own image and sent here to do good and to follow law and eventually join him in paradise. I'm not dismissive entirely of it. I don't mock it. I don't laugh at it. I'm not arrogant. I just don't buy into it. But for a moment, if I buy into it, I'm a pretty decent guy. I'm living with, I've lived with the same woman for 17 years. I'm not married. We do have sex outside of marriage. Both of us are fairly liberal in terms of we would know gay men and women and we don't have any problem with that. We don't have any problem with knowing them. And we find them nice people, just like anybody else. I don't particularly like the idea of gay men and women adopting children. I'm not too happy about that. But I make, you know, I say that out loud. I'm happy to say that. I also believe that traditional Catholics, like yourselves, should absolutely have the right to say whatever it is you think, whatever it is you feel, whatever, you know, how you interpret the scripture, how you interpret the biblical text. But just looking at myself and how I've described myself, according to traditional Catholics, I'm in trouble. And I don't see why I would be in trouble. I'm not a bad guy. Now, like I said, I don't want to get bogged down in this because I want to talk about the Antichrist and where you guys think this is all going. But there are millions of good people, I reckon, in the world who don't do any harm at all and kind of get on with their lives. But I think traditional Catholics might think, well, you're just part of the problem because you turn a blind eye to it when you really should be standing up against something, even though I don't find anything particularly wrong with some of those things. I've kind of talked quite a bit there and maybe I've not made myself clear. What do you think, Paul? Am I part of the problem?
Evil, unfortunately, has like the snowball effect. It turns into an avalanche, and when it comes to things like sodomy, this avalanche is something that is eventually going to smother our society under the weight of corruption, under the weight of perversion. It grows and grows and grows until there's no good left on earth. That's why it has to be stopped, and God is going to intervene, and He's going to stop it. There's just no question about it. This is we see the great tradition recorded in Scripture of the flood when the world became so wicked that God decided to wipe out humanity, and He's going to do it again, and He's going to do it again very soon.
Yeah, fire from heaven.
And it's foretold from ancient times in the ancient Jewish scriptures. It is foretold that this will happen.
Now, Richie, if I could jump in here for a second. Remember, in times past, I mean, I think I've relayed portions of my story to you. We've talked off air, and we've had good conversations. I spend most of my time with non-Catholics, then Catholics. Maybe that is hard to believe by some of your listeners. But listen, for me, it was a conversion process. I was raised a Catholic, if you want, in the Second Vatican, the Council Church. I didn't really understand completely what was going on. Then I had a multitude of things happening to me. I went through my Book of Job experience, and I sat there for quite a considerable amount of time wondering why in the world would God allow this to happen to me. So I shut down. I became a non-believer like you, atheistic, maybe at a certain point, you know, dabbled into, you know, agnosticism or whatnot. I just couldn't process that. So for me, it conversion is a process. And so when I finally got it together and I understood why God was doing it to me, because He was trying to get me on a different path, right? I was a very worldly man, businessman, MBA degree, running businesses, doing this or that. But God needed me to go in a different direction. So I always kind of parlay my conversion story, not that I am St. Paul, but similar to what Paul went through, right? Or Saul in Scripture, right? He got knocked down off of his high horse. And so God allowed him to sit, what was it, 3 days, Father, where he had to get a good chance to sit and do some reflectionary time. Like, hey, what you're doing is not right. And so what Father Kramer and I are trying to say with these divine warnings of nature, like, hey, God is crying out, like, listen, you guys think you're on the right path. And again, when I say you, I'm not talking about you specifically, Rich, but just in general, society is on the wrong path.
Let me respond, Eric. Let me respond. I've got to respond there. I want to remind our listeners, by the way, it's 7 minutes past six. I am very, very happy to be chatting with Father Paul Kramer. Paul is in North Cork this evening. Very welcome, Paul is on the programme. He's got a huge following as Paul. I will publish links to where you can find Paul's books. An Irish-American native he is, living in Cork now, studied philosophy and theology in Rome at the University of St. Thomas Aquinas back in the 1970s. You know all about Eric Kaczewski, Tradcat Night. He's been on the programme before. Love having you on, love sharing these opinions with you. But I want to tell you both that I think you're terribly wrong when you know, what, like Paul says, and of course you'll get plenty of time to respond here, you know, sodomy and it being evil and, you know, it being this terrible scourge. Look, the vast majority of same-sex couples, whether it be male same-sex couples, they're terrific people. They don't do any harm to anybody. They don't bother anybody. I'm not gay. It doesn't fill me with great joy, the idea of being with another man, but they don't do any harm to anybody. If God is angry, you know, as long as they, you know, live, they're kind to their neighbours, they're charitable, they're decent, they're helpful, they're charitable, which gay people I know are, and you know, I'm as happy to be friendly with them as anybody else, and I'm not trying to virtue signal here. But isn't God surely in a state of wrath, maybe, because millions of people are murdered around the world every month or every year for wars based on false flag terrorism? Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, millions and millions of people being murdered, often in the name of God. I'm not so sure that God has got any real problem with people living together and sharing their lives together, so long as they're not bothering anybody else. And I don't want to get bogged down with that. I'm certainly not trying to score any points against you two guys. I have the greatest of respect for you and your opinion. I just don't see why any benevolent, pure love God would care, because it doesn't do anybody else any harm. Now, when you start talking to children aged 4 or 5 and telling them, you know, you can be a trans person, you can be a gay person, or even teaching them about sex and masturbation, I know Paul's got a big problem with that, as you do, Eric, and I agree with you, that's a different thing entirely. But 2 consenting adults not bothering anybody, come on guys, you two guys are far too intelligent to bring that to my radio show. They're not evil, they're not really the problem here. Much, much bigger crimes going on. Not that I believe that homosexuality is a crime. Over to you guys again.
I say, well, first of all, the individual gay couple is much much less on the scale of offense against God's code of ethics, God's law, than someone like Henry Kissinger, who plotted wars and the depopulation of countries and the mass murder of
yes.
So. But that's only one aspect. There's all kinds of evil going on throughout the world. There is a massive rebellion. Humanity is in a state of rebellion against God. And there's a total turning away from God, where people are not listening to the revelation of God. They have no intention of being subject to God's rule.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could talk about the natural law too a little bit, Father. And I would just incorporate, I mean, it all goes back to, I mean, who is your God? We know, and from our perspective, there would be other false religions who, as Scripture says, they would be worshiping devils. I mean, they're openly, you know, outright Satanists in this country, or Luciferians. I'm not saying that every Luciferian, you know, is a sodomite or whatnot, or is a homosexual, but the point is as Catholics, of course, we believe that there is a true God, and he kind of defined what love is, what a loving relationship is. Now I'm talking about on the level of for procreation, which I'm sure Father could talk about as well, because that's the primary aspect behind marriage, is that there be fruit procreation behind that. You know, loving relationship, but I'm sure Father might want to talk about the natural law as well. It just doesn't work.
Can I just say to both of you, and to Paul especially, Paul, I love the message of the New Testament. I love it. I mean, I do. It's beautiful. It is, you know, it's how people should live. You know, we should live, and I won't use the word tolerance because we might end up having an argument, because I say that in jest, by the way, but we should live in harmony, every single one of us, with our neighbours, our brothers, our sisters, our parents, our grandparents, and nature, and the beautiful creation that we have here. We should never do any harm. You know, it's a wonderful, beautiful message. I'm not dismissive of it at all. I think it's fantastic. You know, the words to live by, I would absolutely agree with you. And I'm fascinated by what Paul said a second ago, this massive turning away from God. I think you're right, Paul. I think you're onto something. Because I'm not sure about God, and if the God you know, if God is as you see him, because I'm not sure, I would say a turning away from spirituality, you know, a turning away from the heart. That's how I see it. I think you're right. It is happening. And you, and this is where I suppose we can segue into what evil really is and how it might manifest itself now, and not now, but in the very near future. Acts of evil are commonplace, and they are tolerated. They're tolerated by governments. They're tolerated by the media. There is a mass turning away from love and the spiritual. I think you're spot on there, Paul. I really do. The question is, what can you do about it? What can two very intelligent traditional Catholics do about that in the 21st century? It fascinates me, this.
Well, the means above all have to be spiritual, because as St. Paul says, that we're not up against waging war with the we're not being opposed by flesh and blood, but by the principalities and powers of darkness. People don't really understand, when we speak of heresy, they're thinking of some theological abstraction. They're thinking of this or that sect. But it was Cardinal Henry Edward Manning who wrote, I think, back in 1861, that heresy is really one unified movement that goes back to the very beginning and will culminate with the reign of the Antichrist. The world has been in a spiritual state of war, and that war has been materially manifested in bloody warfare, military warfare, down through the ages. Eric mentioned earlier something about Talmudism and Kabbalism. Now, the idea that I'm trying to get across is that heresy doesn't begin with deviation from the Christian teachings, from the Catholic doctrine. There was heresy already in the Jewish times of the Old Testament, and there was this what is today identified under the name of Gnosticism, which the Freemasons boast of being their religion is Gnosticism. Now, this goes back to the ancient times. It infiltrated into the Jewish church of the Old Testament time. A Jewish scholar, Gershom Scholem, in his book on Jewish mysticism, explained that the Talmud has been saturated with this doctrine of Kabbalah. Now, this is something alien to Judaism. I know there are the very orthodox rabbis who reject this whole idea of Kabbalism, as Kabbalah being anything Judaic at all, because it actually is entirely opposed to the Judaic religion that we find in the scriptures. In fact, we find, look in the Old Testament, it's very, very clear. You see the battle between the God of Israel and the gods of the nations. Remember that great contest between the prophet Elijah and the prophets of Baal. This is not just some obscure mention in the Old Testament literature. This is one instance of a long-standing war that has been going on between these two forces from the very beginning, and will continue until the end of time, but is going to culminate in what Jesus Christ called the Great Tribulation, which will itself culminate in the reign of the Antichrist. But this has been one unified battle between two forces since the most ancient times.
Richie. Come back in, Eric. Just before you come back in, and you'll answer this, Eric. So, listening to Father Paul there, this is the time of the Antichrist, is it? I mean, I see unspeakable horrors every day of the week. I don't speak out about them. I don't mean I don't speak out about them. I generally just tend to keep You know, I look at stuff a lot of the time with my mouth hanging open. Unimaginable, unspeakable, inhuman, evil things are happening, not only around the world, but in this country here in the UK. And, you know, people might wonder, where is God? You know, is God asleep on his watch? What's going on here? You know, we talk about what's happening with children. They want children now to learn how to masturbate in schools. This is not a joke. I mean, this is, it's happening. Yeah. And that's just one. And then of course, you think about the murders, the false wars. And I sit around and I wonder, well, if you two are right, and you two are proper scholars, by the way, whether people agree or disagree with you, you've done your homework. I'm well aware of that. You know the scriptures inside out. If you are right then, Eric, the Antichrist must be reigning right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a whole lot of people who have alluded to this. I mean, Cardinal Biffy a few decades ago indicated that the Antichrist is here. He would be the ultimate humanitarianist, sort of like a Mother Teresa type. And it follows on the point I wanted to follow off, piggyback off of Father Kramer, was you mentioned evil. Like, describe, give me like a one-word description of evil today. I'll give you one word: deception. And you and I have talked about it in non-theological terms, just even what's coming from the mainstream media. What's being presented as wrong is now right. Everything's inverted. So there's a process, and I've said this on my own podcast, and when I discuss how we'll ultimately arrive at this Antichrist figure. And by the way, these certain Talmudists, they're talking about how their reign, their Messiah, will be 2023. I've caught them on numerous times saying this. They're preparing the third temple. We see what's going on there with Trump and Kushner kind of laying down the platform with this false Middle East peace thing going on. Then we have the apostasy in Rome, which we didn't even get to because you mentioned idolatry at the top of the podcast. So yeah. Father Kramer and I will talk about that. Those are two major signs that he's right around the corner. As a matter of fact, there's a well-respected Italian journalist who just came out the other day and was kind of summarized on this one website called Gloria TV. He indicates now that, you know, this is the generation that will see the Antichrist, which is, again, our position. Father Kramer and I, when we talk about the Antichrist being pretty close, right around the corner, I want your listening audience to know that is not the common opinion, unfortunately, in the traditional Catholic world. We're one of the few voices saying, like, hey, there's not a period of peace coming, like, you know, in the next, you know, 5 years or whatnot, that we're going to go through this great storm. And then after that storm clears, that's when the rainbow occurs. So for me, evil, right? Deception, right is wrong. Wrong is right. We couldn't go from Catholicism to the Antichrist in a matter of a few years, Richie. This is why the enemies from inside the church, they needed to gain hold of this Second Vatican Council, right? So that they can implement these kind of man-centered first principles as opposed to God-centered or church-centered principles first. And it's been a watering down process. Yes, this is what the church teaches us. They've always taught us this. No, it's all baloney. It's actually Freemasonic principles, as Father Kramer well knows. So people are being led off of the cliff like lemmings right into the arms of the Antichrist unwillingly. How do I put this? They don't even realize that they're being led out, as Father Malachi Martin alluded to. This is a camouflage apostasy where most Catholics don't even realize they're following a whole other religion. It's not just a few errors here or there, as Archbishop Lefebvre said. This is a whole new religion they're following, which is going to be signed off, sealed, and delivered by the coming biblical false prophet and Antichrist, in my opinion. I don't know if you want to add anything, Father.
Yeah, Father, just before you come back in, stay with that, Father Kramer, if you don't mind, the new one-world religion that you've both kind of touched on earlier on. Eric is just kind of leading into it there. What might that look like, Paul? What might it look like? Could you give us any kind of an idea?
Okay, there is a 1,382-page book that goes into great depth on how modern philosophy, beginning from the time of the rationalists, has led. There's been a development and evolution coming up to this idea of God as a world soul. That it's a pantheistic notion, which is what Cardinal Manning called the embodiment of the spirit of Antichrist. Now, there's a 90-page book written by Cardinal Manning that sums it up perfectly, and it's so concise and so concentrated. It's called The Crisis of the Holy, the Present Crisis of the Holy See. And when I was in London for a few weeks, I was borrowing a friend's computer, and I found that book for a free download, and I couldn't put it down. I was glued to that computer screen until I read the book from cover to cover. It's a book that I highly recommend. You will understand what is the spirit of Antichrist, the spirit of evil that Scripture calls the mystery of iniquity, the spirit of lawlessness. This is summed up perfectly in that book of Cardinal Henry Edward Manning.
And you've taken it on, Paul. You've taken it on in your recent book as well, haven't you?
Yes, I've quoted him extensively in my latest book, yes.
So a vibe then, or a presence rather than an individual, Eric. A kind of something that kind of infests an idea or something which is not physical. That's what we might be talking about when we talk about the Antichrist.
Well, ultimately, what was summarized with the Second Vatican Council, and I just covered this in a podcast before I came onto your show with a longtime Track at Night follower, and we were talking about these cult of man principles, these Freemasonic principles. I just kind of call them the me first principles. We're now denoting that man has rights before God or the church has rights. So again, everything being inverted, sort of an inflation, a puffing out of the chest, saying, you know, a sort of an entitlement. And again, this is where we get back to the liberal ideas of tolerance and convergence and all these Masonic principles, which aren't Catholic. The Antichrist, when he shows up, and again, I'm speaking for myself now and not Father Kramer, because I don't know if he would agree with it or not, but this guy that I've got pegged to be the Antichrist in esoteric circles, his name is Maitreya. He's not any world leader that we see today. So when I use that term, you know, it's not like when this guy shows up, you can say, hi, I'm Maitreya, come follow me or whatnot. I don't know who it is. I do believe he's going to come onto the scene after the economic collapse, which I know you cover on your show. I mean, you guys are well aware of what's happening here economically here with the United States. But the point of the matter is, when this guy does show up, and this is what Pope St. Pius X warned of when he was talking about the Antichrist, he said ultimately the Antichrist was going to come out, and the distinguishing mark would be that he would say that man is God. You don't need grace. You don't need Jesus Christ. You nasty Catholics have been interpreting Scripture even wrong, because the whole UFO agenda comes to the equation. They'll say creationism is wrong. We'll have these fallen angels in the flesh out and about, which I do believe are present in the world today, as I know we've talked about in times past. But I've got exact verbiage from this guy saying this is one of the first things he's going to tell you. You're a God in and of yourself. You are, quote unquote, made in the likeness and image of God, but that interpretation means that you don't need God's grace. And so it'll go through this whole sort of, you know, new age esoteric initiation system, which I do think that they're going to pass through Rome, actually, the sort of pseudo sacraments. And one of them is going to be the mark of the beast. The second initiation, according to this guy, is going to be this counterfeit baptism, which St. Hildegard referred to, that everyone is going to have to take in order to buy or sell in the quote unquote new world. And that could be right around the corner, because I've had all the top, you know, science techie people on the show, as I'm sure you have, and they say they could very well implement this system over the next
very
5
soon.
Years, give or take.
You know, satanic imagery is everywhere, isn't it? It's everywhere, whether you're watching a pop video, if they still make pop videos, they do, I've got MTV. If you watch a pop concert, satanic imagery is everywhere. When you were talking about religions and false religions, you know, I used to think that consumerism was a dark religion. Now I look at climate change evangelical, you know, behavior by people like Greta Thunberg and people like that. Then I look at Extinction Rebellion and groups like those, and they often have symbols they use, and they're often, you know, they're often, I wouldn't say satanic, but they are kind of occult in nature. And I'm fascinated by that, you know. Is that something that people need to look out for? I don't want to be kind of glib with that question. Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
I remember, I think it was about 1986, I had been in the Philippines, and I was visiting my parents in the United States, and I was watching television one Saturday morning with the cartoons, and I was really shocked, because what I was seeing was under the guise of entertainment for children, cartoon program on Saturday morning for kids. What I saw was Canaanite mythology.
Wow. On a children's television show, Paul.
Yes, it was Canaanite mythology disguised as some kind of a surreal adventure episode.
And take a look at some of the TV shows. I'm not sure what you get over there, Richie, but we've got programs here in the United States openly endorsing Lucifer. I mean, there's literally a show called Lucifer.
There is, where he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. And then there's a cartoon out. I saw this the other day. I had the TV on trying to get caught up on the news. I think it was on Fox, which is considered a conservative channel out here. And there's a new show called, I think, like Bless the Hearts. And it's a cartoon that's geared more towards, like, I don't know, kids in their teenage years, probably people in their 30s or 40s or whatnot. And they were openly mocking our Lord, like painting him off as, you know, some kind of lunatic. And again, you know, saying, you know, Satan, you know, Lucifer is the good guy, or yeah, whatnot. It goes back to what I said before about deception. I mean, there's the ultimate brainwashing, and the TV has to be the most utilized tool by the New World Order in order for them to get people to buy into their narratives. I just got another strike on YouTube the other day, and coincidentally, it was another one of my videos kind of unmasking some of the atrocities of Israel. So like 99% of my videos, which are pulled down by YouTube, are literally unmasking the atrocity of Israel. It would only go back to my thesis as to who is really in control of the New World Order, which I've talked about in times past. But yeah, the satanic imagery is all around us. Take a look at all the puppet world leaders that give that 666 hand sign, yeah, whether it's Francis, whether it's Trump, whether it's Erdogan, whether it's Merkel. They're all pledging allegiance to the Antichrist, in my humble opinion. That
if it happened, if it happened once or twice, you might say, well, it's coincidental. But when it happens all the time, even the handshake, and again, you see some, yeah, of the royal family, yeah, sure, doing that thing when they put their hand just inside their jacket with the fingers. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Now,
I want to ask Paul a question. Go ahead. Because I want to ask Paul.
Father Kramer's got an interesting story. I don't know if you can recall, Father, when he came out on my podcast and talked about how when Bergoglio was supposedly elected, when talking about the hand signs and how he might potentially be a Mason. I don't know if you can recall that story, Father, because I know you mentioned it a few podcasts ago. Indicating how there was another seemingly member of a secret society who's like, hey, that's one of our guys. Something
that right?
Like that.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember I was in Canada at the time. No, that was Benedict. When Bergoglio was like that, I was here in County Cork watching on television. And I noticed where he placed his hand on his chest, on his breast, and that's a gesture I know from Masonic manuals. That's the Master Mason's sign of recognition. It's a signal that they give. It's a hand signal to identify themselves as Masons to other Masons. And I saw that, and I became very interested in who is this man when I saw him make that gesture. Now a friend of mine, who was a businessman, he was in a pub in Cork City, and there was another group there who happened to be all Freemasons. And the man told me that the group of Masons were watching the television when Bergoglio was elected, and when they saw that hand gesture, that hand signal, one of the Masons became excited. And he stood up and he said to his companions, look, it's one of ours at the top.
Did he indeed? Did he indeed? It's, you know, I've had one or two men and women over the years who, like yourself, have looked very hard at Freemasonry. And I've come to believe that it's a hugely important secret society. Obviously, you've got compartmentalization. I mean, I remember my listeners now will hear this and they'll think, Richie must be a Mason. I remember when I was living and working in Spain, and my partner, Caroline, she ran her own business there, a bar, Paul, coincidentally. We knew a gentleman from Nottingham, and he was a really nice guy. And we were thinking about relocating to the UK to take over another bar. This is after the crash in 2008, and things were becoming a bit more difficult in Spain. And the gentleman whose name was Alan, he said to me, he said, Richie, if you do come and live in Nottingham, he said, I'll get you connected. I'll recommend you for membership of the Masons, he said to me. And I said, I knew what it was. I said, what's that? And he said, well, it's just a club. He said it's just the club, and he said, well, you know, you get things done. But I do think, first of all, I think Paul is absolutely right when he talks about these world leaders, and you as well, Eric. But I think on some other level, right down at the bottom of it, you've got a bunch of blokes who can pull a few strings, get a few things done. Right. There's no doubt.
Yeah, lower level Masons have no idea what
having
it's
a clue,
really
do they?
It's only the upper level, you know, 32nd degree, 33rd degree. When you hit those levels, you know what the game is all about.
Yeah,
And that could be summarized. And who is the guy? Albert? Was it Albert Pike? Morals a dog.
That's right. Hey, by the way, I must say for those who might take this later on and hold it against me, we didn't move to Nottingham, and I never met any Masons thereafter. Paul, I've got a question for you. I ask Eric this before I do ask Paul the question. This is a terrific conversation, this. There's a huge amount of interest in this on Twitter. Lots of comments. I'm sorry I haven't got to them, but we've got limited time with the guys, and I'm doing the best I can to put the points that you're making on Twitter to Father Paul Kramer and to Eric Gajewski. It's great to have them on the programme today. Paul, I've got to ask you this. I asked Eric this when he was first on this radio programme. It's a very respectful question. I know you'll take it as it's meant. Why are you so convinced? Was there an episode in your life, Paul? You know, when I grew up in Ireland, I used to meet some lovely priests. I met some lovely priests, and I met some not so nice ones. But the lovely ones were, you know, they were very loquacious. They would talk, and they talked about the call, that they had a dream or a feeling, or they felt the presence of Jesus. You're so convinced, Paul, and I'm not impugning you, by the way. I'm not saying you're wrong. Why are you so convinced that you're right? Was there something that happened to you that changed your life?
Well, ultimately, it's not so much for any event that changes one's life. I think anyone who enters the priesthood is going to experience that moment when they when the call of God becomes very palpable to them. But that would be nothing without faith. It's a question of how strong is your faith, your basic loyalty to God, your understanding that you are nothing in the sight of God, and you would not be here were it not for His will, and you surrender yourself to God's will to be His instrument, and you let Him show you the way. And the day will come when you will experience His call to what He wants you to do. It's like the prophet Samuel, when he was called, the voice of God called him, Samuel, Samuel. And so he went to the priest, and the priest said, "When the next time you hear that voice," he said, "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth." Well, when you are of that disposition and listening for the will of God, He will speak.
Yeah, and for me, Richie, I mean, that's a great question. Again, I've talked about my conversion in times past. I mean, looking back on it, I'm sure I've missed an awful lot of signs in my own blindness, you know, God trying to get me on that right path, but, you know, having rebelled myself. And listen, I was a playboy type. I ran through too many women to even list, and that's the God's honest truth. I'm not trying to glorify sin there, but you know, I was bouncing from club to club and bar to bar and trying to make money and trying to move up in the world, and everything just came crashing down all at once. Again, sort of like Saul, but for
yeah,
me,
but did you do any harm? Hang on a second. This is what some of my listeners will be screaming at me to give you guys more of a hard time. And I'm not, you know, I'm not one for trying to give people a hard time just for the sake of it, because I've got great respect for you, for both of you and your life experiences. But, you know, we talked earlier on about same-sex couples and all that. There will be people who will say, Eric, you weren't doing any harm. You were enjoying your life. You were enjoying yourself. Why not?
Well, ultimately, I was destroying myself and my health. I mean, my health specifically, which really began to fall apart. But from a Christian perspective, and I write about this in my book, we're either following the law of selfless love and we're trying to follow Christ, right? If that's the whole principle of our religion is to follow Christ, obviously the Mass being the central theme, you know, the sacrament behind what we're doing, or is it self-love? And so when I sat back and I analyzed my own, you know, my own reflections, my own general, I was like, man, I'm a pretty darn selfish person. I want to gratify all my senses. I want to do all these things that if we are to say as Christians, we're supposed to be in a loving relationship with Jesus, right? And I want to do what he has indicated we need to do in order to stay in his good graces. I wasn't doing any of those things, right? So I had to say, okay, what is my purpose here on earth? I mean, I had a whole, you know, I had to twist my whole life around and say like, okay, what in the world am I doing? Am I here to serve myself? Am I here to just go about and gratify senses and pleasures and make as much money as I want to? I was empty as anything. I was really empty as anything inside. And as I began to, you know, study more and understand that what Christ did teach, what was the true path, and understand, you know, what the church had said, I have a lot of experiences. And again, we shouldn't necessarily push experiences to the forefront, but I've experienced many of the things that certain mystics have indicated in certain their writings. One of which, I'll cover this in my book, and I don't think I've ever revealed this to the public, when St. Therese of Avila is talking about, in the, I think it's in the fifth mansion, in the interior castle, she mentions this experience of flying like an eagle in the sky. And ever since that day that I had a similar experience, that became the backdrop of my work. Anyone could get over to tradcatnight.org and see all kinds of the eagle symbology, which is heavily used in Catholicism. But I had a similar experience, and I couldn't understand it if it weren't for good people and priests at the time, including Father Kramer, who, by the way, is a previous spiritual director of mine. I couldn't understand it and process it, but I knew I was on the right path, so to speak. And so it's a matter of faith in the end, because I've had a lot of atheists. I've got a neighbor who's an atheist right down the road, and he says, well, why are you so convicted, Eric? And I tell him the same thing. I was like, listen, ultimately it comes down to what you believe in. It becomes a question of faith, as I know Father Kramer will allude to.
Is he a good guy, that atheist neighbor? Is he a decent guy? I don't want to dwell on this. Yeah, I'm not trying to trip you up.
Well, I mean, you know, in general, you would kind of label him, I would say he was a man of goodwill. Yeah, he certainly wasn't like, you know, he wasn't like a serial killer or whatnot. But, you know, he went through a hard, you know, some, what I came to the conclusion of, he went through a lot of harsh experiences that I went to. He couldn't process and understand suffering, so he just rejected Christ. That's what I come to in my ministry when I come to individuals. And again, I'm not speaking to you, Richie.
No, I know you're not. I want to ask Paul a question on that. No, it's just because I don't really want to know any God who says to a man who's done right by his neighbours, at the end times, God says, well, look, you didn't believe in me, so, you know, you can go wander in purgatory. I don't want to know that God. And again, I don't want to disrespect or offend you or Father Paul. Paul, on that, I want to ask you a question. Stephen Fry is an actor. Now, forget that he's gay. I'm not mentioning him because he's gay. It doesn't matter that he's gay. He's an actor and a comedian. I know you know who he is, Paul, Stephen Fry. He did a programme some years ago with the Irish broadcaster Gay Byrne. Rest in peace, Gay Byrne, by the way, who died recently. Now, in the interview, I thought Stephen Fry gave a very good answer to a question by Gay Byrne. Stephen Fry's an atheist, as far as I understand. And I think Gay Byrne said something along the lines of, if you did get to meet God, what would you say to him? And I think Stephen Fry said, how dare you? You know, how dare you allow these things go on? If you've got the... I know, Paul, this is a very 5-year-old, 6-year-old child question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Fry said, look, how could you tolerate this? How could you allow people be forced to live in squalor? How could you allow children be bombed to death in Gaza? Millions of people murdered by a few lunatics. And I tell you what, Father Paul Kramer, it must really piss you off, excuse my language, when you hear the architects of destruction profess their love for God. It must really drive you crazy. But Fry said, look, I'd say to him, how dare you? You're asleep on your watch. What do you think, Paul?
Well, we have to, first of all, understand that the wisdom of God exceeds anything that the human mind can grasp. We can't be blaming God for the evils that are being committed by men.
Yeah,
and the evils in the world are, the authors of the evil in the world are men. It's the works of the evils in the world are the works of evil men. So I don't think we can point the finger at God, because God created us and showed us the path of life and the path of death. And because men are choosing the path of death, we can't blame God for that, because he created us with the free will. Mm-hmm. And yeah. He will punish the wicked, but God created us for the purpose to know him and to love him, and to live with him for eternity. And if we do not follow that path, the very purpose of our existence will be missed forever.
It does make you sick, Paul, does it, when you hear the likes of Tony Blair, my God, there's a guy to talk about, converted to Catholicism, a guy responsible for the murder of a million Iraqis and the displacement of 2 million more. An honest man like yourself and a committed practicing Christian, traditional Catholic like yourself, what's it feel like when you hear monsters professing their closeness to God?
Like Nancy Pelosi?
Like Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
any
they're
of
all
them.
Fake Catholics. Yeah, they're all fake.
It's rotten, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, at my age, I've been hearing this kind of thing for decades from those kinds of people. I just shake my head when I think of these people when they talk about how they love God. On the day that they appear before the divine judge, they're going to have a nasty surprise.
Yeah, and maybe even Father Cranmer could talk about that, Richie. I mean, there's a lot of great, you know, the esteemed theologians who talk about how priests will be held to even a higher accountability, you know, bishops, prelates in the church, because if they are leading the flock down the wrong path, they will be held to an even higher standard than us laymen, you know, just simple folk like you and I. But my goodness, so what was that one quote, Father? Was it St. John Chrysostom that talked about hell is paved with the skulls of bishops or something along those lines? I mean, there's an awful lot of quotes that, you know, when you accept the call of being a clergy, this is why we as Catholics, we pray for a good priest in general. I mean, like Father Cranmer, who's a light in this shining darkness all around us, because we have so many fake Catholics around us, but they're held to a higher standard and a higher call. And my goodness, I can't imagine on the day of judgment, wherein it's been indicated by other saints and esteemed writers, there'll be some people who you think that you thought would get to heaven that won't be in heaven, and then there'll be absolute like monsters that maybe you've met in times past who will get into heaven, perhaps you know, last second by miracle, yeah, grace or whatnot. So we just don't know.
I've come to be more, I won't say open-minded, because that is a patronizing thing to say, so I won't say that because I don't mean that. I've come to be more receptive to the ideas of people like Father Paul and yourself, in particularly in the last couple of years, because the evil is unimaginable, and I've got to accept that. You know, I can't explain it. I used to have the answer to everything, you know, I could explain it, and now, Father, I see things like a new communications network being rolled out called 5G, which is going to kill people. It's non-ionizing radiation that is going to have a profoundly negative effect on the human body. I know, Eric, you talk a lot about artificial intelligence and this stuff in your excellent program, it must be said. Folks, if you haven't checked out Tradcat Night before, check it out. I look at this stuff and I know that the people behind it are aware of what it's going to do to people. Now, I used to just reason that away by assuming that I knew everything, and I would say, well, they're just doing it for the money. And I tell you what, Paul, what I've come to understand is they're not doing it just for the money. I don't want to accept that, but I have to accept it. There's something else going on there, something non-human, something dark that I can't get my head around. And that's why I've been listening to people like Eric and others like you in recent years, because I've given up, you know.
The 5G thing, if I could jump in here, I'll give you what the end game of it is, because I cover it quite often. Actually, Deborah Tavares emailed me this morning. 5G is now going down in executive orders here in this country. So Trump fully supports 5G, which is another red flag as to why he's not, you know, against New World Order or whatnot. But listen, when this Antichrist figure shows up, they've got a day called the Day of Declaration, where this could be like the full UFO disclosure thing, you know, happening worldwide. You know, hey, we're here, we're helped to humanity evolve or whatnot. This will be after, you know, economic collapse, societal collapse. A lot of major things will happen before this day. But they actually call it a new day of Pentecost. Now, we've been brainwashed in the conciliar church and Second Vatican Council that we're under this new Pentecost. Well, the Antichrist has same terminology, where he's going to come out on this one particular day. And via this 5G program, which can manipulate, as you know, at the cellular level, our bodies and make it feel like we're experiencing something positive, like a charismatic feeling. And he's going to come out on the scene and say he's, you know, he's here to help humanity. He's going to, you know, move us along into this new, you know, path or whatever. And people are going to experience this Pentecost thing, and it ties in with the weapons of God systems that I've discussed in times past. But 5G is something that is unseen, which is affecting a large number of people, and I don't think they realize. I remember, I think in our last show, Richie, I proposed to you, and I asked you the question whether you thought, as a result of all this animosity that we're seeing in the country, you know, like everyone's kind of on edge.
Yeah.
Like you can't make an opinion without someone wanting to delete you or defriend you or give you a death threat. Is it 5G behind it? You know, manipulating, you know, our behavior. I don't, you know.
Yeah, because it's been around. It's been around for decades, hasn't it? The technology isn't new. Yeah. It's a military grade yeah. technology that's designed to, well, it was designed as kind of what would they call it? Silent weapons for mm-hmm. quiet wars and all
it'll,
that.
It'll yeah. also be used when martial law is declared out in your streets. When, again, this is why I've been saying, you know, get off coastlines, get out of major cities, because once they start rolling out, you know, the armed military, they're going to have those weapons. I mean, you can forget about, and I'm not saying they're not going to have like semi-automatics or whatever, but they've got these sound weapons, basically, and EMF weapons, where they can just, you know, blast that thing and you're done for. I mean, you're not going to be able to, you know, fire back or resist. So.
It reminds me of a poem that I think was written for the Omen, you know, when the Jews returned to Zion and all of that. But at the end of it, there's a horrible line at the end of the poem, turning man against his brother till man exists no more. That's the end game of the mm-hmm. evil entity. I want to ask Paul this. We've got about 5.5 minutes left on this. It's flown. My God, has it flown by, hasn't it? It really has flown by. Eric Kaczewski is on the line. Mary Julie Jeheny, 3 Days of Darkness, Tradcat Night. Go to the website and find out where you can see this film. Support independent content creators like Eric. Terrific radio show there, which broadcasts multiple times a week and a month. It's really good. We've also, of course, got Father Paul Kramer, lecturer, author of numerous articles and books. Paul is a native of Bristol, Connecticut, even in the US, but went to the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in the 70s in Rome. He was ordained back in 1980. Two proper scholars here. Whatever you're getting from this, massive interest in this on Twitter, I can't believe it. It's huge. It really is. Paul, I want to ask you, is it a one-time deal for us, Paul, as human beings on Earth? Or what about those who think that reincarnation? You know, there are those who believe in God and they say, well, he won't cast us into eternal darkness. We might end up, you know, doing the go-round again. What are your thoughts on reincarnation? I know it's a big subject to bring up this late in the program, Paul, but if you can give us a quick answer on that.
A reincarnation is a philosophical attempt at understanding how the energy of life is perpetuated, but it's something imaginative. It's not philosophical. It is as a Belgian Dominican professor who was a dean of philosophy for 32 years at the Angelicum in Rome once said that for so many hundreds of thousands of years the men were living on the earth, and then around 600 BC before Christ, 600 before Christ, men began to think rationally. Men began to think. They began to think. In other words, they began to have systematic ideas to understand the universe, to understand the world, to understand it through its causes. But this is something, and of course, this he's talking about Greek philosophy. Of course, where really rational systematic thought began with the Greeks, but among the Hebrews. The idea of the immortality of the soul that was developed first, I think, by Plato, and he had his first demonstration, which I consider philosophically still to be considered quite valid. The same truths were revealed to the Hebrew prophets, and by the authority of the revealing God, the God of Israel, and the tradition, of course, is the resurrection of the dead, the survival of the soul after death. The soul doesn't become reincarnated. The soul, death is the separation of the body and the soul, and the soul exists in a different realm that is not of this world. The soul is a spiritual substance. It is immaterial. Like the angelic nature, it is a pure spirit once it is separated from the body. And God places us on this earth, unites our soul to our body. It's a unique union. It's only one soul to one body. And on the day of resurrection, that soul and that body will be reunited again by the almighty power of God, because only God has the power to do such a thing as that. When St. Paul was speaking to the Greeks in Athens, some of them were just completely taken aback by the idea that there could be a resurrection. Others were saying, "Well, listen, this is an interesting topic." Among the Jews, they had in the pre-Christian times, there was already the tradition of the resurrection of the dead. So that when we die, our soul is separated from our body, and then at the end of time, God will reunite the soul and the body for eternity, and we will be in our bodies again for the rest of eternity, and preserved by the power of God, either to receive our reward or to be meted out our punishment for eternity.
Eric, do you want to come in on that? Because we've got about 2.5 minutes left before we've got to wrap.
I think he's, I mean, he's hit the nail on the head. I don't think I could really add too much more to that. But I do want to personally thank you, Richie, for this time. I've got to get going to a podcast here in a minute. And I do want to thank Father Kramer for all that he has done. And make sure everyone goes out and gets Father Kramer's book. It's a 3-volume set. The first volume has already come out, so there's actually 2 more volumes coming, Richie. The first volume, I'm nearly complete with the first volume here. It's like 700 something pages, but it's going to help Catholics make sense of what's going on in the church. And really, for those who are not Catholic, I would encourage them to pick it up, because it really helps people to understand the times that we believe that we live in. And I did want to say this in conclusion, though, Richie. You know, the model or the premise of the apostolate that I feel I've been called to is to be sort of a forerunner, a sort of Noah, if you will, but also to, you know, to prepare, but then also, you know, to provide leadership for people, because there have been notable people such as Benedict XVI to talk about that when everything collapses. You mentioned these men of goodwill. They're going to be looking for some kind of answer, because as you said you thought you had all the answers, and you know, it turns out as things get worse, like maybe you don't have all the answers. They're going to be looking for people like Father Paul Kramer and I, us Eagles, to help them process everything that they're seeing, because it's going to be so unimaginable. In accordance with Scripture, our Lord says that people are going to die of fright of thinking what is going to happen next. The powers of the heavens will be shaken, and it is going to be something like no other, to where if you don't have faith, if you don't have hope, you're not going to make the times ahead. So I think it's we're already seeing suicide rates rising, as you and I have talked about in podcast past, and we're not even really to the worst of the worst yet. So people are kind of like dipping out already. And I just wanted to encourage everybody to, you know, remain on the side of faith and hope. Ultimately, this is the message of Fatima, which we didn't talk about. Maybe we could do another show, and Father Kramer and I could talk about Fatima specifically.
I'd love it, because there are lots of things we didn't get to talk about. I'd love to do that in the new year. I really would, mate. And, you know, my word is my bond, no doubt about that. Eric, thanks for coming back on the program. Father Paul Kramer, it was an absolute pleasure to have you on today. Thanks for giving us your time. Good luck with the book. I will put links out to where people can find it. I really appreciate it, Paul, and I hope that you will come back again in the new year and spend some time with us talking about these issues. And I want to wish you both sincerely a very Merry Christmas, a peaceful Christmas, and just again, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it, and all the best to you both. Cheers.
Yeah, and good luck. And for Richie's audience, Richie typically joins me every month, so look for Richie on my show, tradcatnight.org. And yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Keep exposing all these new world order agendas. It's very, very important. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you too, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Paul. Thank you. That was Father Paul Kramer and Eric Gizhevsky live on the line. Eric, of course, is at his base. He's back in the US, of course, and Father Paul Kramer, North Cork, this evening. Really enjoyed that conversation, it must be said. Right, that's about it for today's programme. This will, of course, be on iTunes and Spotify in about 25 minutes' time or thereabouts. It'll be on YouTube later on. Thanks for all your tweets. I did get to a lot of the points you made in that conversation, so don't hold it against me if I didn't read out your particular comment. I look forward to, in the new year, getting the guys back on again to talk about Fatima. Alrighty. We are going to go. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 9:30 for the newspaper review programme on YouTube, that nonsense. And then a 5 o'clock radio show tomorrow again, as usual. You look after yourselves and one another. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. And tomorrow, Jean-Ann Crowley will be 71. Once again, happy birthday to our kid in Cleggan there. Bye.